an initiative that was recently, unfortunately, the whole initiative nationally was defunded. It was the Minority AIDS Research Initiative, and of course, the programs that had to do with women of color and HIV were eliminated. So, but we were able to get it off the ground and get it started and have a good 2 years of very nice data. So this is Hablando Claro. The initiative started as Straight Talk, right? But we immediately changed it to Hablando Claro, Clear Talk, because we didn't want anyone to think it was like a homophobic project in any way. And this speaks to promotoras as agents of sexual reproductive health within a family-based intervention. And it was an intervention based in the family, but focusing on female intergenerational dyads. Oh. Okay, I don't have anything to disclose. Well, maybe I do, but I'm not going to. I want to acknowledge right away our staff. Lilia, where's Lilia? Lilia, right there in the front. Lilia did all of our analysis and works in HIV full-time and with us as well, so we're really grateful that she's here with us today. Malawi Garcia, where's Matmel? Who coordinated the project, and Natalia, who helped us. Then there's some other staff in there. You know who you are, but these are the people that we couldn't get through the day without. And we also had Susana Salas, who's not here, and Susana Flores, who are our therapists within the project and research assistants, and then our 6 community health workers, who you can see pictured there in the front. That's the project team right there. Okay. We pushed the back one. Okay, as you know, the impact on women has grown since the start of the epidemic. AIDS diagnosis in 1985 was 8%, 20% in 95, and 27% in 2000. Latinas comprise 13% of the U.S. female population, account for 17% of estimated AIDS diagnosis, and we know this is actually probably going to go up to 19%. Once we incorporate all the HIV data, this will probably go up even further. The rate for Latinos and women of multiple races is 5 times that the rate of white women. Women are more likely to be infected through heterosexual contact, which represents 83% of new HIV infections in Latinas. And we know when we're looking at risk factors, what's really important is we need to consider that most of the women who get infected are married, right? And we would never see marriage as a risk factor listed in within the risk factors, but this is definitely something we need to look at. So we've got to redefine who's at risk. More than 6 in 10 of new infections occur among women aged 13 to 39. So this affects the population that's very, very young. In LA County, most Latinos learn of their diagnosis when they're given an AIDS diagnosis. So this isn't the 9 to 15 years. This is like the last 2 to 3 years kind of thing. So they learn way, way down. So if you think that T cells are 1800 to 1300 normally, they're learning when either they have an opportunistic infection or a combination of those, or their T cells are below 200. So it takes about 80 T cells to 100 the first year and 50 T cells thereafter. So you're really looking at a very, very long-term infection. 67% had less than a year of between learning of their HIV and receiving an AIDS diagnosis. Largest group of early detection failures, and 35% had less than 1 month before receiving their AIDS case diagnosis. And unfortunately, Latinos are also the most likely to die within 18 months of learning of their status. So the impact of Latino culture, which is a really important thing to consider. There's a confounding risk of being a woman, a Latina, and a Spanish-speaking immigrant, which warrant our immediate attention in looking at that population. Cultural norms between Latino parents and adolescents can make it much more difficult for there to be sexual risk-related communication. So the mother has formed all of her sexual risk understanding in her country of origin. Now the daughter is here. In another country, developing all her norms in a very, very different context, right? So how can we blend these together? And the other thing that I really like about this project is we know that familia, right, or familismo is an important Latino asset. So this really banks on the issue of familismo and the cultural asset of familismo in terms of strengthening HIV communication and sexual risk-related communication. So studies have shown that Latino parents experience difficulty discussing sex and contraception with their children. In our focus groups, a lot of Latinos told us, a lot of Latino youth say, my just don't do it, and just don't get pregnant, right? Those are the two messages. They don't tell us how, but they tell us not to do it and not to get pregnant. And or view sexual health as a topic that shouldn't be discussed within norms, right? And so, and the youth also told us, if I go talk to my mom about this, right, or I ask a question of my parents, I can't, because they're going to think I'm already having sex and I'm not, right? So, as I said before, the importance of family and parental communication and the degree to which familism is valued is something that we should be working more on. And I was so happy to see on the other presentations that family is going to be this weaving element through, throughout. So it's an untapped resource. We talk about, oh, we did a familistic intervention, but we're oftentimes not measuring it. We're not really looking at what it really means. You have a lot of physicians complaining that every time someone comes to visit a Latino patient, they bring their whole family with them, instead of really tapping into what that could mean in terms of treatment adherence, whether it's HIV or diabetes. And although few interventions mention these values as critical, these constructs aren't measured. And I'm working with Selena right here on another project to really begin to start to tease these out. Because how could someone at the healthcare sector, when they're about ready to develop an intervention, know whether this person is familistic, whether this person values simpatía, and how could that change the way that we provide care and make it more effective? So we looked at, the grant was to adapt a DEVI, so we looked at the Teen Health Project. And the Teen Health Project was a different intervention, but it was the only intervention that we could find that, and Debbie's are these, the evidence-based interventions that the CDC at the time was saying, you know, these are the good interventions. This was the only one we could find that actually had a family component woven in. So we took that and adapted it and changed it a lot. So it's a community-level intervention. The adolescents at risk at high risk for HIV, the setting was urban, low-income housing developments in Wisconsin, Virginia, and Washington, so this is a teen health, skills-based to enact change, modeling peer norms, social reinforcement for maintaining the prevention of HIV risk behavior. So that was the teen health project. And the activities weren't really done together, so we wove a lot of the activities in ours, they were done together. So, actually, I think I already talked about this, so I'm just going to skip this. But one of the things that we wanted to do was to really, and this is what we do with all of our projects, we really want to ensure that they're culturally and linguistically relevant. So we conducted literature reviews and looked at what was out there already. We reviewed findings from previous NCLR-CSULB projects because we work a lot with promotores in different settings. We conducted and analyzed focus groups with Latino youth and parents and female moms. And we used community-based participatory research so that we would make sure that we would have this unique lens with which to view context of risk, but also to deliver effective interventions. And we have a Center Promotores de Salud team who work with us, so it's really nice because they're the jefas, they're the bosses, they tell us this will work, I don't think this will work, so it's constantly bouncing back and forth. And here they are. So this is our Promotores team. So we really see that promotoras have a wonderful ability to serve as these agents of change. They're in their communities, they're already leaders, they're already recognized, there's confianza within communities, so that people have trust, they trust them, they were more likely to go to them. And I was just reading another article that was talking about the fact that even when we're doing home visits, even among the undocumented, they're more likely to want home visits, even if they are undocumented, because they trust the promotoras so much, right? So even when they're that vulnerable, they want the promotoras in their homes. So we collaborated since inception on all phases of the project. We identified emerging community priorities and needs, materials development, teaching methods, training methods, everything. And promotoras, if we look back at where it came from, it was actually very Freirean in origin, so it really came out of the favelas and facilitated learning and that whole theory. And also what we look at is there's this really untapped, a lot of the promotoras are experiencing the same kind of risk, right? So it's the same kind of risk, and oftentimes we had a team of HIV positive promotoras who were actually HIV positive themselves, and they launched from HIV into diabetes, into all different other kinds of things because they realized that this potential to educate is there, right? And the passion to educate is there. So as I said, it's a model used by the World Health Organization. It's an effective use of community resources. I love it because when project funding ends, skills stay within communities, right? People don't stop educating themselves and each other and their families and their friends and their vecinos. It stays within the community. So And I think so many years, there have been so many academic projects that come in, do a project, and pull out of the community, right? And these resources stay. Recreate social support mechanisms that are lost when people immigrate, right? And I just notice the difference every time I go back to my community in Mexico, whenever I could sit on the curb, and everyone around me would come and tell me and fill me in on all the chisme, right? All the gossip I just learned in 20 minutes just sitting on that curb. If I go to my own community and sit on the curb, even though people know me, they might call the police on me, right? So it's a completely different context of community, and I think we need to all keep that in mind. It's particularly effective with communities that have little access to culturally and linguistically relevant care and education. And it can be used to, también son navegadoras, right? So they can help navigate the system as well. So our system is so bureaucratic and so difficult, right, to access, that promotores can be very good with that as well. This is our Hablando Claro kit. I didn't bring it with me because we're still in final printing stages, but these kits come in a box. So they're in a box. The promotora carries the box. The kit is developed in Spanish first, then we translate to English, and I'm blessed to have a staff that's very pan-Latino, so they have different countries of origin, as do our promotoras. So we develop everything in Spanish first, then we transcreate it into English. So Spanish is the first language. And so this is where there's a message on the front, right? And on the other side are the notes for the promotora, so the person who's there. So these can be taken into the home. They can be projected up on a screen. But this kit is a very nice thing to have. And the promotoras really like it because it really legitimizes their work. It's like a briefcase they're carrying in. So the goal was to reduce the risk of HIV infection among Latina teens, 12 to 18, and their female family dyads. So we first started with moms and daughters, but we also let sobrinas and tías, and someone would be a tía of one and a mother of another, so we kind of let that whole thing happen. So, and the objectives were to increase intention to use condoms, to delay sexual onset. So this wasn't a just say no, this was just say espérate, right? So just wait. Until you're sure, right? And if you're sure, go for it, but be safe in this context. Knowledge related to HIV risk reduction between the intergenerational dyads, intention to perform HIV risk reduction behaviors, self-reported sexual dialogue. So we wanted, oh, I'm already at 5 minutes, oh my God. So we wanted them to be talking about sex, right? We wanted them to be talking about sex, not to change the channel of the novela, but to actively be talking about it at the dinner table. We wanted to increase intention to test for HIV and the number of participants who'd engaged in HIV testing. So we had 1 hour introductory session, and then we had 2 4-hour sessions after that. Of course, it was cleared by IRB, we had informed consent, and then we did follow-up 3 months. And we also did monthly social support groups with our therapists and with our promotoras to really carry out, and those went out 6 months. This is Están en Acción, these are our promotoras in action. So these are all the different activities. I'm going to focus on one that's called La Conquista. So one of the activities was we wanted the mother to convince the daughter to have sex with her without a condom, right? So the mother had to take on the papel of being the guy that was trying to convince the daughter. It worked wonderfully, right? Because the daughter thinks the mother doesn't know anything, right? And the mother can be really convincing because she knows a lot, right? And what we found is that the mothers, after they could convince their daughters to have sex with them without a condom, went, oh my God, if I can convince her, then some guy can convince her really easily. So I need to be talking about this more. So this was our sample. We had two pilots and then the actual intervention. So 3 charlas, 9 charlas, and 12 charlas. I'm going to rush through this. But preliminary findings, you can see that the youth were more likely to be in high school or have finished high school. The mothers were more likely to have finished middle school. You can see the difference in age. You can see that the mothers were more likely to have been born outside the United States, 98.6. The youth were more likely to be in the United States. And the median years for those who were foreign-born, adults 14.4 and youth 8. You can see that the primary language of both was Spanish, with the youth being much more acculturated. So I think the youth scored at 3.2. So that's right on the cusp. I think it's 3.3 that indicates when we're looking at the language acculturation scale. You can see that the youth were more likely to be insured, and the adults were, but almost half the adults were uninsured. Okay. So oral sex, we looked at oral sex. Again, the average age was 14 of the youth, so a lot of them hadn't engaged in sex yet, but some of them had. And when we look at condom use, consistent condom use, 33.3 for the youth and 10.3 for the adults. Follow-up, oral sex in the past 3 months, and our purpose isn't to make sex happen less, okay? So we didn't want to decrease sex, especially in the mothers, right? Absolutely not. But we did want to increase condom use. So we looked at consistent condom use. And again, it's very hard to introduce condoms in a relationship that's been going on for a long, long time. So we just wanted them to begin to think about it. So consistent condom use increased a teeny tiny bit in the adults, but not really. And actually went down in the youth. So, but there were very few. We only had two. Vaginal sex, we know that the youth, there was a few of them that had vaginal sex. Of course, the adults were having sex. Consistent condom use in the past 3 months went up a little bit in the adults, which was a good thing. In terms of anal sex, ever had anal sex with the adults more than the youth, very few. In the past 3 months, very low, and in the adults, five. Consistent condom use, again, we really need to raise the condom use in the adults. The youth was of the one person they were. We did get statistically significant increases in HIV knowledge in both the youth and the adults. In terms of HIV testing, we didn't see a difference between baseline and follow-up, but most of the youth and the adults who reported recent HIV testing were tested at the CHRNA anyway. So when we're doing 3 month follow-up, we're not going to get them to test again, probably. One more point. Most new testers had their HIV test at the CHRNA, which was one of our purposes as well. Top three reasons never tested. Don't think I need the test. Don't want my partner to know that I got tested. Because again, we have to look at this element of confianza. If he finds out I got tested, it means that he thinks that I don't trust him, or he might think that I'm messing around and that he won't trust me. And then when confianza goes out of the relationship, it's not that true intimacy anymore. So we really have to look at how HIV testing can be reframed so that it's not a threat to intimacy and afraid. And some people, especially the adults, thinking that it still costs. Sexual communication, we were so excited about this, it increased, right? So we were able to get people to begin talking about sex, and that was probably the biggest undercurrent in the whole intervention. We wanted people talking about sex. So both youth and adult Latinas report greater frequency and comfort of talking about a lot of different things. So not just HIV, but a lot of things associated with sex. So we wanted it to go beyond just don't do it and don't get pregnant, and we did. So condoms was the topic that was least discussed and with less comfort. So we really tried to begin to introduce condom demonstrations, having moms and daughters put condoms on and do all, and I know I'm out of time, so I'm going to rush. And there was a discrepancy in the frequency of communication. So the adults said, yes, we are communicating a lot more. The youth said, you know what, they're not communicating that much, right, at follow-up. So significant, but not as much. But then I'm thinking, I'm a mother of a 14-year-old, and I can communicate something again and again, and she'll say we never talked about it. So maybe it's that, right? Maybe it's that, or maybe the other explanation that it could be is that for the moms, they're talking about sex with their daughters way more than they did at the beginning. So for them, this is a huge shift. And the daughter's reality in context of risk and living in the United States, sex is all over the place. So I talk about it all over the place, and I see it all over the place. So when I'm at home, it's really not that much, right? So I think we need to delve deeper into that. So initiated sex-related talk, the moms were more likely to agree that they knew how to talk about sex now, which was a really good plus. And that stayed through a follow-up. So communication section, we found out that needed to be more dynamic, so we tried to use constant comparison and keep it going in that direction. We needed to allow more time for data collection surveys. That always takes a lot of time, and we're constantly experimenting. How can we shrink that time so that the response burden isn't too great? And we also have to think about adult-level literacy as well. And we need to provide childcare, so we did. And the other thing is, I think we need to delve deeper into the explanations regarding the frequency of communication in youth and the adults and see why that's different. And that's our contact information. Do I have time to take any questions?
Why don't you take one question that we got running a little.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Sergio Mantos. Thank you for your presentation. And
thank you, Sergio.
Thank you for providing people that opportunity to practice negotiating condom use. We find that very productive, too. My question has to do with males. I understand that this was a women's program.
Right.
But in many of our Latino cultures, women are really responsible for maintaining our families and our communities together, and yet men often don't bear any of the responsibility for these communities, and then they should have women. So I'm wondering, did you come across any of that?
Or we did. And what was so sad about this was that, and we've been working with the Office of Women's Health for a long time, and the Office of Women's Health is very women-focused, and I love the Office of Women's Health, obviously, but it's very women-focused, so it was like, wow, we need to start doing some interventions with the men. We need to start bringing the men in. Can we do this? Can we do that? And we just received permission, because we were hearing from the women, you know, this is great. And we, in our past research, we did a national needs assessment of risk among Latinas, and we heard again and again, you know, you want to reduce my risk, you better start talking to my husband, right? So we know that that's, but we finally had our funder to agree that we could go forward and start doing groups for men as well. And then nationally, the funding was pulled. So it was so disappointing because the promotoras, everyone's telling us the same thing, and we know, right? But we have to work within the realm of what that is. And I also think there is a place for women to begin communicating. And you know, la mujer es el tronco de la familia, right? She's the trunk, right? So hopefully what we were able to do is grow the roots around sexual communication just a little bit more with this project, decrease sexual risk, and hopefully it will come up. But your point is so great, especially given the fact that so many Latinas are exposed through marriage due to male infidelity. So the responsibility factor needs to come through really clearly for the males as well. So, okay, thanks a lot.